Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. As the nuclear disaster unfolded in Japan in March of last year, we interviewed several anti-nuclear activists, scientists, and researchers whose work has spanned the last 40 to 50 years. They have the long view. Nuclear disasters aren't new. There were several in recent history, but Three Mile Island and even Chernobyl pale compared to the ongoing destruction of this most recent disaster in Fukushima, Japan. For perspective, the aftermath of Chernobyl is still being felt. The area is a wasteland, unsafe for prolonged visits, and all these decades later, only 20% of children in Belarus are healthy and have normal IQs. All our experienced experts and activists know it's only a matter of time before a disaster like this happens in the United States. For this reason, we're all pushing hard against the sudden recent proposal to build new nuclear plants here in the U.S. Join us today to hear a cautionary report from a professor in Japan. It's meant to make activists out of you, too. First, an editorial by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. Vaccination is a cornerstone of conventional medical practice, so much so that vaccination and immunization are used interchangeably. That's because a complex of social forces has created a kind of herd effect. Anyone who questions the wisdom of vaccination, especially the vaccination of children, is ignored, shouted down, ostracized, and even threatened with jail time. The state of California's assembly is considering legislation that further promotes the mass vaccination of children. The current state law already requires the vaccination of every child who attends public school. However, parents can obtain an exemption on philosophical grounds. It's not easy, but it's possible. The new legislation, Assembly Bill 2109, sponsored by the California Medical Association, would require parents to obtain written permission for an exemption from an MD. Naturopaths and chiropractors, for example, are excluded. This will undoubtedly herd even more children into being vaccinated. The rationale for forced vaccination is herd immunity. An infectious disease will not spread if enough people in a population have developed immunity to it. The reason is fairly simple. There are three steps to the spread of an infectious disease: exposure, infection, and sickness. You won't get sick if you're not exposed. Even if you're exposed, you won't get sick if you don't get infected. And even if you're infected, you won't get sick if your immune system neutralizes the infection. So, from the herd's perspective, the spread of disease is prevented by minimizing exposures, preventing infection, and supporting a healthy immune system throughout the herd. Here's where I have a problem with this argument. If someone is vaccinated, they are supposedly protected and so no longer at risk. If someone chooses to take the risk of sickness by not being vaccinated, why is it that anyone else's business? So long as people are well informed of the risks, why do you need anyone's permission to opt out? What makes sense of this is two curses that plague our culture. These twins have been with us in full force since the beginning of the last century and show no signs of weakening. The first curse is that a new technology is taken as a matter of faith to have only a good side, until it's shown after a lot of suffering to have a bad side. The second curse is the culture of expertise, in which not only do experts have the institutional power to decide what is good for us, we happily go along. Now, let me say clearly that public health is rightly based on the principle that actions that one person takes that put others at risk involuntarily ought to be regulated, although those actions should be regulated to the satisfaction of those at risk. What typically happens is they are regulated to the satisfaction of experts. Of course, that's part of the culture of expertise. The herd immunity rationale for vaccination falls apart because the risk of disease is entirely voluntary. So this permission slip law makes no sense to me from a public health standpoint. However, it makes perfect sense from the standpoint of the political economy of conventional medicine. In addition to the culture of expertise that herds us into technological corrals, there are two other herding effects. First, the physician Suzanne Humphreys argues that doctors are simply indoctrinated into the faith of vaccination, confusing the interventionist medical practice of vaccination with the promotion of biological immunity. Second, Mike Adams argues that the pharmaceutical industry and the Pentagon create immense pressure to promote vaccination through the influence on agencies such as the Institute of Medicine. Of course, the crucial question is whether vaccination risks harm or is instead all sunny skies. Here's an example. The eradication of polio is supposed to demonstrate the triumph of vaccination, yet there's a diagnostic sleight of hand going on. While the poliomyelitis cases have declined, the number of cases of acute flaccid paralysis has increased. This is an umbrella diagnosis for conditions of weakness that include polio, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, Guillain-Barré syndrome, and other conditions of muscular weakness and paralysis. As mass polio vaccinations have increased, the cases of acute flaccid paralysis have also increased. Some think there's a connection. They are ignored. When the 20th century opened a little over 100 years ago, the dominant cause of death was infectious disease. The gospel of technological progress tells us that it was vaccination and other medical miracles that stopped all that. The truth is that it was sanitation, improved nutrition, and rising incomes that eliminated infectious disease as a primary killer, especially of children. But the medical herd holds rabidly to the myth that everyone should be vaccinated. If you disagree, you don't count. A transcript of this editorial is available at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Jeffrey Fawcett is a political economist, writer, and health educator, a health consultant who produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Now we're going to go directly to our topic for today, which is Fukushima, More Lies and Cover-Ups. And we have two guests with us today. We have from Japan, Professor Akira Murakami, who teaches North American culture and media literacy at Akita University in Northeast Japan. He received his Master of Arts degree in English and American Literature from Keio University in 1981. Mr. Murakami currently is visiting the U.S., speaking out about the unresolved crisis in Japan after the Fukushima nuclear disaster, and how it's, of course, affecting the people there. So, konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa.
Thank you for making yourself available in this way.
I'm honored to be taking part in this program because this radio show is addressing such a large audience.
Yes. And also joining us today is Mary Beth Brannigan from the Ecological Options Network, EON, which is a nonprofit media service for progressive organizations and campaigns. Award-winning filmmakers Mary Beth Brannigan and Jim Heedle have been partners in life and work for over 25 years. Their videos have been broadcast internationally on PBS, Link TV, and Free Speech TV, and screened to the U.S. Congress. Many parliaments and at the U.N., as well as used by activists worldwide. So welcome to both of you. Welcome, Mary Beth.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For having us.
Mm-hmm. So, Professor Murakami.
You can call me Akira.
Akira, okay.
It's my first name.
Okay, Akira. Is it risky for you to be speaking out here in the United States? Does your university know that you're doing this?
My president is quite permissive of my anti-nuke activities. So, it's quite okay.
Are you also educating people in Japan?
Yes. Soon after the accident, so many mothers around me were anxious about the health of their children. So I started giving lectures on the danger of internal exposure.
So why don't you bring us up to date? Because there's not really any, except for left-wing media resources, there's very little report on what's actually going on now in Japan. Can you bring us up to date?
Yes. If you watch television, I mean, if your only source of information is television, very likely you have the impression that radiation is not as dangerous as you might think. And also, Buy Fukushima and Eat Fukushima campaign is going on. I mean, if you cry wolf three times, then nobody will believe you any longer. But the government and the media have a big advantage. They can repeat a same lie 100 times to create a myth, create a truth of their own.
So let's tell the truth. What's the latest news about leakage and contamination? Is there still radiation leaking?
Yes. Last month, last February, in Minami Soma City, 30 kilometers north of the stricken plant, residents found many chunks of black dirt all over the city. And Dr. Yamauchi Tomoya, Kobe University, Radiological Science, checked the readings and found that more than 1 million becquerels per kilo, I mean, these chunks of black dust contain more than 1 million becquerels of radioactivity.
So that's a lot.
And
right.
People are still living as usual.
So we're talking about radioactive rubble?
Yes.
Okay.
Are these radioactive level.
Dust and rubble?
I mean, aerosol is spreading from the stricken plant.
Did you say aerosols?
Aerosol, yes.
Aerosols.
And did you mean, Akira, did you mean that it those chunks of black dirt that they found
is coming from the stricken plant?
But how would they not have noticed them before? Did it just recently get...
just last month.
Mm-hmm. And it just got blown there, or was there another explosion?
Mm-hmm. No. No other explosion, but a great amount of radioactivity is still leaking from three broken containment vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And Tokyo is also contaminated.
Yeah, that's shocking.
And readings of the average soil contamination in the Tokyo metropolitan area somewhere between 600 becquerels to 800 becquerels.
So this is...
And last November, Dr. Katsuma Yagasaki, Emeritus Professor of Physics at Ryukyu University, said in a lecture that children, pregnant women, and women wishing to have babies.
Pregnant women and women wanting children, yes.
Should be evacuated from Tokyo.
Yes, wow. So, Akira,
yes.
Are they still incinerating waste material in Japan?
Yes.
They're still burning things.
Yes, especially in the Tokyo metropolitan area. The soil has been so highly contaminated, that means if you incinerated the soil, then concentration would be awful, horrible.
Yes, it goes into the air. So for us, here in the United States, it means that there's still radiation drifting in a plume over to us. Is that correct?
Yes. The jet stream is blowing eastward, bringing radioactive material to the United States.
Do we know where it's falling in the largest concentrations? Is anybody measuring this?
In Japan?
Well, in Japan, we know that any measurements that are being taken, I assume, are being done by private citizen groups?
Yes, private groups.
Yeah.
Right, and here in the U.S., we believe that the government is taking measurements, but not making that
public.
Public.
Yeah.
They're not allowing the public to know.
Yeah.
Right. Arne Gunderson.
Yeah.
Who we
interviewed. Yeah.
And, yes. Mm-hmm. And we did through Arne. There were air filters from Seattle and other places sent to a lab to get them tested, and that showed, of course, this was right after the explosions in Fukushima, that Seattle area was half as radioactive in their particles per hour as Tokyo region.
Oh, boy. Well, we also know that the UC School of Nuclear Engineering has tested and found elevated radiation in San Francisco in the Bay Area.
That's right.
Milk, food, soil,
right.
Water, high
right.
Cesium. And
right.
I think there have been some other testing. Again, it's not being released. It is. I think you can go to the UC site and find this information, although it's not easy to understand, you know.
Right.
So it's hard to know.
I had to stare at it for a couple of hours to figure out what their graphs meant, but I did it, and I think that if I can do it, most people could, but it does require
some patience,
willingness to really stare
mm-hmm.
at
you
it.
You have to
for
stare
a while.
At it. So, one of the things. Sorry, Akira.
Sorry.
Akira, go ahead.
Radioactive contamination might have sneaking into might be sneaking into your foodstuff here in the United States.
Well, yes.
We know it has.
We know it has. Yeah, we know it has.
There are hot spots too. There, it's
mm-hmm.
not uniformly
yes.
distributed. That's the interesting thing. It's quite
it's concentrating in odd areas. Let me just tell people that you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. By phone, we have Akira Murakami, who is a professor in Japan, who is speaking out about the disaster in Japan and educating Americans about it. And we also have Mary Beth Brannigan from the Ecological Options Network, or EON, E-O-N. Did you want to give out a website, Mary Beth?
Yes. People can get more information about all of this and also information about where a professor is speaking in the Bay Area by going to our blog, EON3EMF.net. It's for electromagnetic frequencies.
Yeah, and we'll put it on our website as well.
Thank you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a sharp increase. Jeanette Sherman, Dr. Jeanette Sherman, who we interviewed, who is, she's, you know, elderly and has studied this for like 50 years and predicted that this would happen. She has reported that there's a very sharp increase in infant mortality in various areas
yes.
of the U.S. from the drift. Is that happening in Japan as well?
Yes, of course.
Yes.
But we have so much cover-up.
Yes.
And medical doctors, most medical doctors are on their side hiding precious information about health victims. So we are looking for a convert.
Yes, I hear you.
The medical world and of our academia.
Yeah, we need people to speak out, both here and in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
The public health agencies have completely failed to admit what's happening and to educate citizens on even very simple things they can do to protect themselves, like we had a lot of rain on the West Coast here in the United States after the disaster, and there were no reports being given to people to leave their rain clothes outside of the house, leave their shoes outside of the house, not to track the rain into the house. There was, it was a very simple thing that you could have done, and that was so. It's
But it's a right thing to do.
Yes.
Even here in the United States.
You think it's still important to do that now? You think there's enough drift now?
Be careful about the food you eat.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I just went out with our new Geiger counter and detector, and so far the readings aren't elevated in this particular rainfall.
Yeah, it's very hard to tell. The problem with these nuclear fission products is that they persist for just decades and decades. Not only cesium, they all do. And the reason that they're dangerous to human beings is that they. So I have a list here of cesium lasts 30 years, plutonium 20.
No, cesium lasts 300 years.
Oh, 300? Oh, I'm reading from an article that.
A 30-year half-life.
Oh, that's the half-life.
Yeah, when you talk about half-lives, you've got to multiply that by 10.
Well, if that's the case, then plutonium is
250,000.
And strontium is going to be 10 is going to be 290, and then uranium. If it's 700 million years, then that's times 10. So I don't know what that is because my math and on and iodine. But let me also just say that because the reason no one's talking about this is it creates. An atmosphere of helplessness in people and panic, and helplessness is not useful.
Well, the other reason is because the nuclear industry wants to keep going.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
Wants force us to pay for more
nuclear
reactors.
But my point was going to be that I think here on the West Coast now that the amount of fission products that are coming over are not as high as what was happening before, but they're still... is some reason to pay attention to this, not to ignore it. So, Akira, you were going to say something about watch what you're eating. You're talking about maybe not having milk or making sure that the milk that you're drinking, your children is drinking, has been tested.
First, let me introduce to you a very important project. This organization... Breast Milk Exam Mom and Support Network. This organization takes the readings of breast milk.
So this is this a project that citizens are doing? They're testing mother's breast milk?
Yes.
Citizens.
They send samples to labs that check the radiation for a certain amount of money. And if the sample contains a certain radiation, then this NGO gives the mother some instructions and apoplectin tablets.
Yes, apoplectin is supposed to help with this.
Mm-hmm. They learned this lesson from Chernobyl experience.
Yeah, vitamin C has also been studied in people who have had high exposures to radiation and has been found to decrease some of the illness. So all of the antioxidant vitamins are going to be terribly important. In other words, this is not a good time to decide you don't need to take vitamins. All antioxidant, all your vitamins are going to be protective in the
world. And our body may take radioactive metals and radioactive minerals for healthy ones. So
yes, they replace. They replace them.
We should take in a lot of healthy metals and minerals by going on a vegetarian diet, for example. better to have a whole grain bread than to have white bread.
Oh, well, sure.
And better to have a lot of vegetables than to have meat.
Well, I'm not... The problem is that everything is contaminated. If meat and milk is contaminated, then vegetables are contaminated as well. The difference is, the only thing to consider is, of course, it's better to think about where your meat is coming from. If I lived in Japan, I don't know if I would eat meat at this point. But here, the reason for eating animal proteins, if you don't have an objection morally to it, is that there are sulfur-containing amino acids in meat and dairy and products that come from animals. And those sulfur-containing amino acids, cysteine and methionine, are the things that fuel your detoxification pathways in your liver. It helps to make glutathione. If you don't consume those, if you are eating a strict vegetarian diet, it's always a good idea to maybe take them in capsules, you know, which are not from animal source. But if you eschew all dairy and all meat, it's very important to include those sulfur-containing aminos, or your liver won't be able to detoxify, even to the extent that it can, any of these substances. Although these metals, as we said, are internal emitters. They stay in the body for decades and continue to emit. So, but that means that you still need to be prudent about taking care of your health. So it's going to be different for different people, but please be cautious with the sulfur-containing aminos and the...
And if we have a sufficient number of detectors to check the radiation of your food, then we'll be able to tell healthy meat from unhealthy stuff.
Yeah, that's a big if. I don't know if... Mary Beth, are you aware of anybody testing? I mean, we know that the UC... Berkeley School of Nuclear Engineering is tested and founded in... It just says food, milk.
Well, what
so what food, you know?
What they tested originally was berries, or what they... arugula, spinach, and let's see, some other leafy vegetables.
Sure, they would, because they take up the water.
When you first have fallout, it's going to fall on the leafy on the leaves.
Yep.
And then after a while, it gets into the topsoil, and then it gets concentrated in the root vegetables. So they didn't go on to the root vegetables after testing and finding it on all of those food items. But what they did test for later was the topsoil and milk. So they continued to find it in the topsoil. And this is from, I think it was from the Sacramento area, Alameda area, and Sonoma. And then they also found... the milk as recently as mid-February this year has elevated levels of cesium from Bay Area-produced milk.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that happens because I'm a health educator is that people, right after the disaster, were getting in touch with me and wanting me to tell them that there were things they could do to protect themselves with nutrients. You know, that if you ate a bunch of seaweed, or if you ate a bunch of soy or something, that it would protect you. And it's very difficult, because I don't want people to feel helpless. I want them to do things that make sense. But the thing that makes the most sense in terms of the health effects of the helplessness, which is very corrosive, is to become an activist and to participate in any way that you can to fight against the proliferation of these nuclear facilities everywhere in the United States and stuff. And to remember that these projects are linked to nuclear weapons. One of the reasons that these technologies persist, because clearly if you have problems where there are meltdowns and accidents, the cost of the power is no longer inexpensive. It suddenly becomes very expensive, plus the power plants themselves are far more expensive to build. And in terms of green technologies, they use materials to be built with that are not green. So their carbon footprint is very high to begin with. And then the idea is that this is a cheap power source, but it's not cheap because there are accidents all the time. And people don't realize it, but there are little accidents all the time with power plants.
Well, in daily operation... they have to vent radioactive steam.
Exactly so.
And radioactive water.
That's right.
So that's been used to cool the reactors, to keep them cool. And what I've become so excruciatingly aware of is the absolute importance of keeping them cooled all the time. That's what.
That's why they're near the ocean.
That's right, or a body of water, a lake. They're ringing the Great Lakes here in the United States and all around.
Very dangerous. And you should never, ever live close to one of these things or downstream.
No,
I need to. I just need to take a brief break so stations can identify themselves, among other things. So we're going to just break for a brief musical interlude here. You are listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. Jeff Fawcett is sitting by me, and we are speaking about Fukushima and the continuing lies and cover-ups. Who we have with us is Akira Murakami, who is a professor of American literature in Japan, who is speaking here in the United States. There'll be a posting on our website of where you can go to find out where. And from the Ecological Options Network, Mary Beth Brannigan. And I would love you to just stay with us. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about this some more. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and Jeff Fawcett is sitting by. We are discussing Fukushima again on this bit after the anniversary. And with us is Akira Murakami, who is a professor of American literature and English in Japan, who is visiting the U.S. to try to educate Americans about the risks of these technologies. And we have with us also the Ecological Options Network representative there's a partner of two people, Mary Beth Brannigan. They're going to be hosting some talks with Dr. Murakami. Those will be posted on their website. And Mary Beth, maybe you'd like to give that out again.
Right. It's EON3EMFblog.net. And that's for electromagnetic frequencies. So it's EON3EMFblog.net. I also wanted to just finish the point that I was making before break, which is that most people don't understand that in order to keep the cooling going at a nuclear reactor, you have to. It can't use electricity that it makes itself. It has to have electricity coming to it from off-site, from the grid. So if we have electrical blackouts from solar flares or from a wireless smart grid, weakened grid, then we are really in a heightened danger of meltdowns for all of these reactors that require constant cooling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I also wanted to go back one.
I just need to stop you for a moment because I just have to give out a little bit of information. I just want to remind people that you can visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, for easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows. And you'll find under the topic radiation, lots of shows about both electromagnetic radiation and also nuclear radiation. You can choose a download or you can get a library card. There's information about our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our book, and lots more. It's yourownhealthandfitness.org. You can email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Sorry to interrupt you. Please go on, Mary Beth.
Oh, thank you so much, Lena, for doing all this work. And it's so interesting that we, too, are focused on both the electromagnetic frequency problems of wireless technologies as well as ionizing radiation from the nuclear technologies.
And they're related.
And they are definitely related. They're just moving you down the spectrum a little bit. And it's very curious that the health effects are so similar.
They're similar, and they have very slightly different mechanisms.
Definitely different mm-hmm. mechanisms, which is something that the older educated physicists are, it's almost like a religion. They believe that nothing else but ionizing radiation can do the damage that we are seeing done.
Yeah. But it's damaging DNA, and it's preventing DNA from repairing itself.
Exactly.
Akira, I think you also feel unsettled about radio frequency. And in fact, they're working on weapons made out of this as well.
And I do not use any cell phone back then in Japan because I am quite aware of its health effects.
Are you sensitive?
Kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I also wanted to mention on the health of products, zeolite.
It's isn't it old fossil material? It's kind of
volcanic.
Volcanic. Oh,
volcanic material that you can take internally, and
it's a chelator.
In fact, in Chernobyl, they made cookies with it and gave it to the children. But it can be used as a detoxifier like pectin. Mm-hmm. And in fact, right after Fukushima, when they started flooding the ocean with that radioactive water, they put pallets of huge amounts of zeolite mm-hmm. outside of the drain mm-hmm. pipe that took it out into the ocean trying to capture it for a while. I think they probably gave up, unfortunately, because the French have done a study recently that has calculated that there were at least twice as much radiation released into the ocean than that has been heretofore admitted to.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Good news.
Yeah.
And if we have new bearings in decontamination technology, we might have a much lower incidence of cancer and other diseases.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, Arne Gunderson is already predicting that, he's saying that one-third of Fukushima children have lumps in their thyroids already.
And most Japanese do not know almost anything about what happened to people in East European countries.
Yeah, after Chernobyl. Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, only 20% of the children in Belarus, which is proximal to Chernobyl, are normal children, are healthy children with normal mental capacity and stuff. Mm. You know, Akira.
And we have so much news about preconditions. I mean, short temperedness, bleeding from nostrils. Skin diseases, nosebleeds, skin problems,
heart attacks, all of
in the Tokyo metropolitan area. I have my sister and the parents living in Tokyo, but my sister is working with a construction company. Covered all over, so my sister wouldn't listen to my talk anymore.
my family doesn't. Anyway,
this information divide is tearing up communities,
sure.
families, even couples.
Yeah, but I want to go back to that. But before we go there, one of the things that's really shocking to me, because when I was very young, maybe 13 years old, I saw the film Hiroshima Mon Amour, which is a film that was made in France, where it's a film within a film, and it shows some very shocking and disturbing pictures, movies of the aftermath of Hiroshima. And at 13, I became an anti-nuclear activist. because I was so, I had no idea, and I was so frightened, and there was this whole thing going on in the United States of getting under tables, you know, because during the Cold War. So here we have a country that has been the only country where nuclear bombs have been dropped, aside from depleted uranium. Now we turn out it's about the same amount of, but consciously dropping. So here's Japan, the most anti-nuclear of all the countries in the world. How on earth did the government manage to push through this idea of having nuclear power plants? How did that happen? I mean, I know there was an issue with power, but still, how did they convince people? How did they?
In the Second World War, we were beaten by the United States. So after the war, we looked up to the United States as superpower in the field of science and technology, in the field of industry and economics, and also the military. So we took nuclear science for the development of science, open door to the future. Do you remember the animated character, cartoon character, Astro Boy?
Yeah, Astro Boy, yes.
And he has a small reactor in his chest.
Nice, good and for his heart.
Do you also remember Doraemon, a cat robot without a pair of ears?
I don't think so.
I don't remember that either.
No, maybe that was a Japanese cartoon.
Mm-hmm. And he also has a small reactor in his chest.
Mm-hmm. So these were brainwashing techniques.
Mm-hmm. And in 1953, President Eisenhower made the famous Atoms for Peace speech at the General Assembly of the United Nations. We were fatally attracted to the notion of peace and scientific development. So we were all tricked into believing that nuclear technology would lead us to
independence,
a bright future.
Independence, too, because Japan is an island, so you have to import oil and stuff. So it was energy independence. But it turns out that, if I'm not correct, that in fact Japanese power with all the with the nuclear plants, it hasn't made it cheaper, has it?
No, but again, covered all over.
Do you
we used to think that nuclear power generation comes cheapest, but recent data tell us that actually it's the highest. And if we count in the cost for decomposition, then the figure would be astronomical.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's the same here. I mean, and it has to make, it's only logical that plants that cost billions of dollars, multiple billions of dollars, are not going to be as cost-effective as windmills and solar panels, of course. So we're talking small-scale appropriate technology.
Yeah, but of course, you know, we're not really, you know, it's the big, as they say, the elephant in the room, the thing that's not being discussed, is the relationship between nuclear power plants and the war machine, you know, the bombs.
Nuclear arms, yes.
Nuclear weapons.
You're right.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Marybeth, but I just wonder, in Japan, are people still anti-nuclear in terms of weapons? So are they, is there a relationship in Japan between the reactors and the bombs?
But we've never been told about the close relationship between nuclear arms and nuclear reactors. But nuclear business doesn't pay unless you make nuclear weapons. But we didn't know anything about that.
Yes. And so there's also, the U.S. is also involved in promoting this. There are companies, the U.S. companies, like GE and whatnot, that are involved in this cover-up.
Let me point out one thing. In 2006, Toshiba electric appliances maker.
Toshiba.
Well, he's saying it. He's saying it the correct way. No.
Toshiba.
Toshiba bought out the nuclear power generation section of Westinghouse.
Oh, yeah.
Merger and assimilation.
We bring good things to light, yes.
And Westinghouse hasn't sold any new product since the accident at Three Mile Island.
Mm.
If you are the CEO of Toshiba, how would you like to buy such a company?
Yeah, really. You know, right now, I just have to interject that right now in California, our two of our four nuclear reactors that are operating has been closed down. That's the San Onofre reactors number 2 and 3. And those have been closed down because of a defective steam generators that's already leaking radiation. And it was these generators were just installed 2 years ago, and they were made by that company in Japan.
Yeah, well, let me just say, this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with, you just heard Mary Beth Brannigan from EON, E-I-E-O-N. There's a website link on our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, where you can find out where Dr. Akira Murakami is going to be speaking. And our other guest, of course, our primary guest is Professor Akira Murakami from Japan. Our own Amy Goodman, of course, did a segment on one citizen that has been speaking out, which is, as you know, Akira, the gentleman who was a labor leader for workers, and he managed to get himself back into the plant so he could report on what was happening at the Fukushima plant. And so he's speaking out, and Arne Gunderson is sort of following on and pointing out that the type of nuclear reactor that Fukushima is the same as many of the reactors that we have in the United States that are old and are of the same sort, and so very, very vulnerable to the same kind of accident.
23 of them.
Oh, jeez.
Mm-hmm.
So, Akira, are people becoming activists? Is there?
Yes.
Are they?
This is a good sign.
Yes.
Mothers who are not aware of social and political issues.
Mothers, yes.
Are not activists. Newly self-made activists.
And their husbands, I guess, are not supporting them somehow? There's a split in families?
In many cases, unfortunately, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe there'll be some changes in the gender balance in Japan because of this.
I do hope so.
Because women really feel threatened here from this, for their children.
Yes, that's right.
Are we seeing... I mean, would you say that there's a large number of people becoming anti-nuclear activists? Is it growing?
No,
it's small.
We are still a minority, but we have made ourselves felt in Japanese society.
And the government is not punishing people for speaking out?
Not directly, but we have a kind of... conformist atmosphere.
Conformist.
So, newly self-made female activists usually lose friends and sometimes husbands.
Yes, they move out. Now.
But they are determined to do it at any cost.
Now, is it the case that, as I understand it, there are people in contaminated areas that are still living there and the government is not allowing them to evacuate?
They are staying because, for financial reasons.
No, but I understood that at least on
if
the
government supported them, they would gladly relocate themselves to areas
safer.
Like Okinawa, Osaka, and Shikoku, where the readings are quite low.
So what you're saying is that the way that they're being prevented is not that it's illegal for them to leave, it's that they're given, if they're given anything, it's such a small, I think I heard they're giving people from the contaminated areas, the really bad places, they're giving them only $1,000, you know, the equivalent of $1,000 US, and the people don't have the money to leave. Is that what you're saying?
The decontamination or radiation cleanup projects are going on to give us the impression that we can still stay in our hometowns and relocation is never necessary. But once the wind blows carrying radiation from nearby forests and mountains, their efforts would come to nothing in an instant.
So what is your biggest hope that this tragedy, yes, the thing that you wish for this tragedy to make happen? What is your message to the people of the United States?
Solidarity of citizens the world over.
So in other words, this is a
need messages and encouragement from all over the world.
What kind of encouragement do you think is necessary?
So many people, so many NGOs have sent messages and information for us, but unfortunately, most Japanese people do not read English. So please give subtitles in Japanese or Japanese translation version. Please make Japanese translation available to us.
That's a good thought. Mm-hmm. So,
and at the same time, yes. We collect donations for NGOs like Breast Milk Exam, Mom and Child Support Network.
Can you say the name of the network again?
Breast Milk Exam.
Breast Milk Exam.
Mom and Child Support Network.
Mama and Child Support.
There will be a link on the EON website.
Yes. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, we actually became connected to Professor Murakami because someone was kind enough to do a Japanese translation of a video that we had done of ourselves going to the Japanese consulate, pleading with them to not move the radioactive rubble to the uncontaminated parts of Japan. And there were 15,000 views the first week that was translated into Japanese.
Thank you guys for doing that. Boy. There is also apparently a lot of information on the NIRS website. That's NIRS. So it's NIRS.org/actions.htm. So,
Americans are blessed with pioneering works by J.M. Gould, Ernest Sternglass.
Jay Gould. Ernest Sternglass, who we interviewed.
And John Goffman.
John Goffman, who died recently, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the important thing to remember that John left us with is that there is no safe dose of radiation of any kind. And now that we know that electromagnetic or radio frequency, wireless, microwave, radar, whatever you want to call it, now we know for sure that this is not safe. For the World Health Organization to reverse its position and to say that it's a possible class 2 carcinogen, it may seem like a subject of a joke to a lot of people, but it's not, because they are very, very conservative.
Mm-hmm. I also hope that WHO will soon say goodbye to IAEA.
IAEA, can you explain?
International Atomic Energy Agency.
Oh, yes.
because they are firmly affiliated to IAEA, WHO.
In 1962, they signed an agreement. They actually signed an agreement, the WHO, the World Health Organization, with the IAEA that promotes nuclear technology, saying that they would promise never to publish any data that they hadn't cleared first with the IAEA.
And these two international entities have been playing down the health effects by Chernobyl incident accident.
You know, I have to think that part of the reason all of this is happening is because both electromagnetic radiation, and non-ionizing, and ionizing nuclear radiation cause brain damage. I mean, I'm not being funny. It seriously does. The amount of cognitive dysfunction, both neurological and cognitive effects of both of these things, and intensely so. I mean, we're going to find, I think, with the radio frequency as well, that you're damaging thyroid glands. In my practice, I'm seeing people who are, there's a thing called exposure-induced loss of tolerance. This is a term that's used in toxicology. We're seeing that people now, because they're installing smart meters and they're raising the levels of all of this smog, this electrosmog, that people are losing their cognitive capacity, and they're also seeing very weird fluctuations in their sex hormones and in their endocrine hormones, like their thyroid function is suddenly fluctuating. We're also seeing a rise, very exponentially, very high rise in the rates of autoimmune diseases because of the effects on the immune system of both of these technologies. And now there's like suddenly these diagnoses of these rare forms of scleroderma, which is a horrible autoimmune disease that causes hardening of the tissues throughout the body and can be fatal. So it's, I have to think that it, everybody likes the toys. Everybody thinks everything's convenient. It's as if there's this illusion that things can be free or cheap or easy, and nothing that's worth having is that way. So it's
have
very...
you noticed the study recently that came out, Lena, that shows that moral decision-making capacity is also affected?
No, send that to me, please.
Yes, I will.
So we're running out of time. I want very much to say from very much from my heart to you, Akira Murakami, thank you so very much. Arigato,
and,
arigato.
And I'm honored to be part of this program.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm very honored that you traveled this far and that you are being so brave and so courageous. I remember a story.
But my last message is, please shut down Diablo Canyon before it's too late.
Yeah, you are, yeah.
And San Onofre. Mm-hmm.
Yes. When I was a student, when I was studying Soto Buddhism, Soto Zen Buddhism, I was told that in some of the temples in Japan, that the monks run from place to place, and as they pass each other, they say, Gambatte ne, which means persevere, I think, doesn't it? Persevere?
Good luck
or persevere?
Do your best.
Do your best. So, gambatte ne.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Lena.
Thank you both. And Mary Beth, again, if you would give out your website so people can find out where to go and see Dr. Murakami in person.
Right. Eon 3, E-O-N, the number 3, EMF, electromagnetic frequency, ZMF, blog.net.
And thank you also for your extraordinary work and efforts on our behalf.
Thank you so
much. Okay.
Yes, thank you and goodbye.
Thank you. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org. For easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows, choose a download or our new library card feature. There's also information about our practice, a free stream, an hour stream of this show, our book, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. And you can email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.